This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
We're talking today about hospice with the director of the hospice at Provena Covenant Hospital, Ruth Matowick, and also a longtime hospice volunteer, Nancy Day. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
What is hospice?
Hospice is a philosophy of care for people at end of life. And I think its uniqueness is it focuses on the whole person, body, soul, and spirit, and the challenges that people and their families face at end of life.
Now, Ruth, you're a nurse, an RN. What led you to become interested in this particular philosophy?
I had had a lot of different experiences, inpatient care, out in the community, both working in a hospital, nursing home, and I saw people who died in ways that I thought that there needed to be a better way of addressing all of the needs. And because many times you could have pain control, but people's spirits may still be very troubled at end of life, or there were unfinished business. And I think what drew me to hospice was the way in which the team, we have chaplains and social workers, nurses, physicians, lots of people who provide support, volunteer support, home health aides to help with bathing, and looking at the whole person, it felt right. And I can say for many of the nurses that we have on our team, they have lots of years of experience. And it's the other thing that draws us is it's one-on-one. When you're out in the home with a patient and their family, it's a very special connection. It's very different than office or clinic care or hospital. Mm-hmm. And so that was my story on how I got to hospice.
Nancy Day, you've been a volunteer at the hospice program at Provena Covenant for how long?
25 years.
And that's how long the program's been in existence,
actually,
right?
Actually, I was in the second class that was educated in hospice. So I'm considered the historian of the group.
And hospice is celebrating its 25th anniversary. You said it began when?
July 7th of 1980.
July 7th, mm-hmm. So we're in the same month.
Yes.
How did it get started? Whose idea was it?
Go ahead, Ruth.
Well, I think Nancy may have some added insights, as I wasn't part of the program then. But Jan Shepherdson, Dr. Schmale, and Sister Betty, along with the sisters, the Servants of the Holy Heart of Mary at Provena Covenant, actually back then it would have been Mercy. Mm-hmm. We're also looking at how to provide care for people who were dying, and hospice was very new in the United States at that point, and it was sort of something new that they felt called to do. Hospice seemed very much to fulfill the sense of mission, and so they started off and training volunteers, and we were the second hospice in the state, the first one outside of Chicago.
Wow. Now, Jen Shepherdson's a frequent caller to this program.
Yes.
She was a nurse at Mercy at that
time and
became interested in this and was one of the
guiding
lights.
Yes. Mm-hmm. She and Dr. Schmale in terms of the clinical and then also
and Sister
Betty.
Betty
with the just the vision and getting volunteers and –
Well, actually, hospice was just about a year or two old in this country at that point. So it was a whole new model for how to extend care to terminally ill. Mm-hmm. And they did pick up the ball and start with it. And at that point, we had a unit at Mercy Hospital out on fourth floor. We had four rooms where we would bring patients. And now it has grown to be a home program. To be able to keep families at home.
Now, when it first began in this country, and as you say, the program here at Provena Covenant, then Mercy, was one of the earliest. How did people learn about it? How did you get the word out about what it was? What kind of services could be provided?
Well, we have some archived articles, and I know that there were some TV shows. We've got some of the old beta tapes.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Were in a 4th of July parade, for one thing.
Oh, really?
And yes, and Ann had a hospice float
a number of years
ago that we all worked on and put together. But you're right. It, word of mouth, education of the public, newspaper articles, radio shows, television.
And now 25 years later, what have been the changes?
Well, in some sense, it's still one of the best kept secrets of providing care for people at end of life. I think one of the things that's changed is there are so many more options for treatment for people today that are, even though hospice looks at people that have a life expectancy of around 6 months or so, we still have a large majority that are spending days to weeks in hospice, and some of that is...
And so some people wait, you think, much longer than perhaps they should have to get the services that are available.
In terms of their... Yes. For other people, they wanted as much treatment as possible and continued to do that. So we're not necessarily... If it's a matter of education, yes, we would have wanted to get people sooner. Mm-hmm. Some people are still seeking active treatment, and so for them, when they're ready, if that's closer to the end, we're grateful to provide care at that point too.
Sure.
It just makes it we have less time to get to know patients and their families, and so therefore what we're able to do in a shorter period of time obviously is less than if there's more connection for months.
Let me encourage listeners who would like to ask a question or make a comment to our guest today. This is a live program, so do please give us a call. By telephone, you may reach us anywhere the program is heard, including on the internet, at 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-WILL. The call letters of the station here in Champaign-Urbana. If you are a local listener, we have several lines you may access by punching in 333-9455. That's 333-WILL if you're in the Champaign-Urbana listening area. We are eager to have people make comments or perhaps share an experience that you've had with hospice, either here or elsewhere. We're talking today with a longtime hospice volunteer, Nancy Day. Her last name is spelled D-A-I-G-H, I think.
Right, that's it.
And Ruth Matowick, who is the director. Ruth is a nurse. And how long have you been director at hospice?
I think it's about 13 years. It's more than 10.
Okay.
So it's been exciting. I think the... one of the things, we've had different staff. Many of the staff and even many of the volunteers have been consistent for many years. Mm-hmm. I think it's the philosophy and the goals of care and the things hopefully that remain the same in terms of focusing on what patients need at end of life.
Mm-hmm. We have a couple callers waiting. Let's go to line number one. You're on Keeping the Faith. Go right ahead.
Yes, I have two questions. One is, what would might be some of the roles that a volunteer would play in giving someone hospice care? And then, two, I'd like to get a better understanding of the differences between hospice care and palliative care, if there are differences. And I'll hang up and listen
on the radio. Thank you for the questions. Why don't we go to Nancy Day? In terms of what are some of the volunteer roles?
Well, I think most of all, I see myself as providing respite for families that are in the midst of this journey they're taking.
Giving them a break.
Giving them a break. And that includes anything from going and sitting with the patient so that a family member is free to do anything from shopping to going out to dinner with family. I also see myself as someone who can run errands for the family if they feel confined and not able to get out and about. We can do that. But basically, what I feel I have done is to provide some respite time for family members.
Mm-hmm. And what about you, Ruth, from your perspective as director of a hospice? What roles do you see the volunteers playing?
We have volunteers that do direct care, which Nancy was talking about. We also have volunteers that help with our yearly fundraising event that we do with the hospital, Celebration of Taste, which is this year, I think, October 15th. We also have volunteers that help in the office doing clerical functions, charts, paperwork forms, you know, just which is very valuable for us. Volunteers put out the newsletter to the newsletter and to other community agencies. We have volunteers that help in bereavement. Nancy also has helped with that.
Yes.
If you want to share what that is.
Now or later?
Sure, go ahead.
Well, in bereavement, we follow a family for at least 13 months after the death event to get them through their first year anniversaries of most things. And that involves calling on them, seeing how things are going for them, meeting with them to be a sounding board for them, just sharing in what this grief is like, because for each one it's very unique, very individual. There's no set pattern.
And the other question the caller had was about the difference between palliative care and hospice.
Palliative care, to palliate means to alleviate. So we're looking at alleviating symptoms.
Getting rid of some of the pain or all of the
correct.
Pain.
Pain could be nausea, could be shortness of breath, could be anything that is distressing based on the reason, you know, why, what symptoms the person has. All of hospice is palliative care. Not all palliative care is hospice. People can still have their symptoms alleviated while they're seeking aggressive treatment. They're having surgeries. They're having chemotherapy. They're continuing. Maybe they had open heart surgery. Those sorts of things.
But palliative care is always a part of hospice.
Yes. Sure. Absolutely.
We have another caller on. Two callers waiting. Let's go to line number two. Yes, you're on the air.
Well, hi. I often call here, and I know both Ruth and Nancy. I have two comments and one question. I started, I was part of the force starting the program 25 years ago. Oh, my, how awful old I am. Anyway, my comment about that is, you think the vision is the same as it was then? The vision I had way back then was compassion, suffering with. Do you think that compassion still exists? And then I'll listen to what you have to say, and I might call later. Who knows?
Hi, Jan. It's good to hear your voice.
This is Jan Shepherdson, who was at the beginning of this hospice program.
Absolutely.
I'm very glad to have you call again.
Thank you.
You can't speak of hospice, in my opinion, without speaking the words compassion, care, comfort, and love. It that vision cannot change, and it still be a hospice program.
I totally agree.
And where does that compassion come from for each of you? Was this something you experienced at some particular point in your life where it was meaningful when you were young, when you were growing up, at a crisis? Where did you learn about compassion?
Well, I think my life has been filled with compassion. And, yes, being a part of the hospice program, the hospice training, my experiences with families over 25 years, they have taught me much about compassion.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Ruth?
I think I learned an added dimension in my life. I'd been a nurse for a long time. My brother died. And I had a whole new different perspective about what grief was. And
how old was he?
27. And so it was, that gave me personal insight, I think, into grief and bereavement. Nancy talked about, you know, the 13 months and following up and what that's like and understanding grief in a very personal way, as opposed to what we knew in nursing school and what you had seen in your practice. And I think for me, that gave me an understanding. I hopefully, as a nurse, was compassionate and caring before that time, but that just gave me a little added insight.
We have another caller patiently waiting on line number three. You're on the air with our guests, Ruth Matawick and Nancy Day.
Hello. My mother was died a few years ago, and hospice helped us out considerably with all the problems that we were having. I lived in Indianapolis at the time. My mother lived in Elizabethtown, Kentucky, and we I only had one sister there, and she was sitting with her all the time. And you guys were a godsend to us. The hospice program is wonderful, and I was wondering, do you guys have in Elizabethtown, they have a hospice area where you can donate clothing and things like that. My mother had a lot of clothes, and they were really nice clothes, and we took them to the hospice, and I'm not sure. I think they pass them out to the patients that are in need of clothing and stuff. And I just wanted to thank you guys and let you know that you're doing a wonderful job, and that it makes a lot of difference to the people that are having trouble during that time. And I'll listen off the air. Thank you.
Thank you for the comment.
Well, first of all, we're always so grateful to hear folks out there reinforce what we hope we're accomplishing. And I think the answer to the question is, I think we all wish there were an exacting spot for folks to donate things. Unfortunately, we have so many new laws and rules and regulations about what we can give to other people. The nearest that we come to in this community is places that will accept used clothing. And I think there are a few things that you can let a hospice office know that you have available if they can use it. But so many things they are not privileged to be able to pass on to another family patient or whatever, just by law, not by the fact that we're not interested and don't want to do it. So you kind of have to look for things in a community that will accept these items.
And there are various different community agencies that we have here that accept clothing and donation and other sorts of things. Sometimes our social worker will, if there's a hospice patient that has a need, will check with some of the agencies. And then we also have donated funds to be able to help. So we've got some of the various different community groups that are able to accept clothing and other things.
Is there an auxiliary group that does accept clothing for resale to help raise funds for various hospital programs?
It used to have the resale shop, but since that closed a few years ago, we don't have that option specifically. Prior to that, we did.
Okay. Very good. Let me give the phone numbers again for people who might like to call and make a comment or share an experience with hospice here or elsewhere. In Champaign-Urbana, the number is 333-9455. 333-WILL. Elsewhere, if it's a long-distance call, we have a toll-free line, 1-800-222-9455. So if you're listening anywhere where it's a long-distance call, including on the Internet, this program, as well as all other programs on WILL, can be accessed at WILL.UIUC.edu, and then click on AM 580 to hear these programs. And these programs are also archived at that source. And if you missed a program or part of a program and would like to hear it again, you can go anytime via computer to that site and select a program by date or name or title and hear it on your computer. We do have another caller waiting on line one to talk with our guests, Ruth Matawick and Nancy Day.
Hi, me again. I just have a question. Tell me about, Nancy said often she did respite care. What does that mean? Lots of people don't know these terms. I know it. But anyway, what does respite care mean?
Jan is being a good host here, since I missed asking that question. I should have asked on behalf of our listeners who might not know.
Thank you, Jan, for keeping me honest and online. Respite care, when we speak of respite care, is just providing an opportunity for families to maybe the best way to word it is to say to get away from the work that they are doing. And hospice is work. It is for a family, it is for a patient, it is for a staff. So what we try to do is to go in and offer a little relief, just offer a little relief time.
Now, where do you folks get relief from the pressures, from the reminders constantly of the fact that life ends in death? Ruth, I know when you first started, you were telling me that people were saying, well, expect to do this maybe 2 years, but then you'll probably be burned out. Why are you still doing it 12, 13, 14 years later?
I think one of the keys to hospice is the team. We talked earlier about the different people, or I should say the professions, because mm-hmm. we have. And then it's also the people. It's the volunteers, the staff. a wonderful team that do absolutely amazing things. And then the other part of me, I sort of am an amateur photographer. I keep my camera with me, and capturing landscapes or pictures of my nephews looking at bugs or just fun sorts of things. It's capturing life. And I think one of the things when you work with people who have a limited life expectancy, actually all of us have a limited life expectancy.
We just don't know.
That it really, you watch some of the things that people do, whether that's finishing sometimes what we call unfinished business. Sometimes we had one mother that was able to write letters and have things for her daughters when someday they would get married after she died.
Have you read Gilead? It's a wonderful book about a man who's in his 70s, I think 76, and he's writing to his young son. He happens to have a young son. Sort of an unfinished business. Marilyn Robinson is the author. It won the Pulitzer Prize this year in fiction. But it's a wonderful novel called Gilead. I can recommend it. But you were telling us about unfinished business and this particular woman you were saying.
Sure. But I think it's those sorts of things that when we see people go through that at end of life, it sort of makes us want to make sure that we're valuing life, and because we see how precious it is, and cherishing the moments and making the most of what we have in our life.
Right. Absolutely.
And how about you, Nancy? What do you do when you're not helping people in a hospice to sort of refresh yourself so you have the energy to keep being a volunteer?
Well, I'm very blessed and fortunate to have a family that I enjoy being with and grandchildren. So I'm able to travel with my husband, and I'm able to go and visit our grandchildren. And so that probably provides me with – I don't find my hospice work, obviously, 25 years later, to drain me.
Mm-hmm.
It's I heard today, and it just struck me as so true. It's sort of my mission, and I hope I'm lighting a candle, and that is my reward. I have been so rewarded, and we love to be rewarded, so I keep going back for more of the rewards that I've gained in these years with hospice.
And we're delighted that she continues to do that because, well, the knowledge, the light that she does shine for new volunteers, for the rest of us, the wisdom, lots of things that she has seen and learned we value greatly.
Let's let listeners know a little bit about each of your backgrounds. Nancy, where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Springfield, Illinois, and by profession was an occupational therapist for a number of years. So obviously I've always had a little bit of interest in medical things.
Where did you study that?
I was in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. And then while I was here, I was an advisor for undergraduates in elementary and early childhood education at the University of Illinois for 15 years.
Hmm.
And it was during that time that I took my hospice training.
Where did you meet your husband?
I met my husband in Springfield. We both went to the same high school, but he did not recognize me until some years later. And then he realized how he'd passed up a good chance.
And you said you were telling me before the program started that you come from a Irish Catholic family?
Yes, my maiden name was Kelly. So that, and I used to be a redhead, freckled-faced girl.
Okay.
Now I'm just white-haired. Yes, but we did. We both grew up in Springfield. We haven't gotten too far from home.
What about you, Ruth? Where are you from?
I grew up down by St. Louis, and I was just listening to Nancy think about the university and being here. I met my husband when he was in school here at the university, when my brother was here at the university.
Mm.
I went to nursing school in St. Louis, but I got my master's in nursing here at the university. Mm.
Which nursing school? In St. Louis?
You mean Barnes Hospital School of Nursing.
Uh-huh.
It's now part of St. Louis University.
Right.
But, yeah.
I have a brother on the medical staff there at SLU.
Yes.
And so what attracted you to nursing to start with?
I don't know. Really? I was growing up, I was going to either be a teacher or a nurse, and somehow when I was about, I don't know, 14, 15, 16, you could be a candy striper, and so I went and did that in a nursing home, and that was sort of my test to see if I could do it, if it would be too, I don't know, if I squeamish, or, you know, if I could handle it.
And sure.
I sort of did okay and decided that would be a fine thing. So,
what was the hardest thing about nursing for you, though? Chemistry.
Actually, I liked math.
Okay.
Yeah, some of the inorganic chemistry and some of those. I would say at the university with my master's, it was statistics.
Oh.
That was.
I can sympathize with that.
Yes, it made my head hurt. But
I want to talk a little bit about the philosophy that you started with when I asked you first what hospice was, and you described that philosophy. What is it that seems to be the key to that philosophy in terms of the effect on people, the families, the folks who are around? What seems to make the difference to them?
There's such a personal touch in hospice, just really a personal touch that cannot be attained through our normal feelings about going through the death event.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think what's so difficult, I was thinking about that, how much emphasis we put upon a birth, the excitement and the and the enthusiasm and the preparation. And yet when we talk about death, it's sort of a closed door. And people, If we talk about it at all, it's very, very difficult. So I think it's the openness that you can have in hospice, the ability to discuss issues, the compassion, the caring, the listening techniques that people involved in hospice really have attained.
Hmm. I want to talk a little bit about some of the specific people in the team that you mentioned earlier. But before we get to that, since we're about halfway through this program, let me tell listeners, if you tuned in late, this is Keeping the Faith, a weekly live telephone program here on WILL from 5 to 6 on Sundays. And our guests today are Ruth Matowick, who's the director, and Nancy Day, who's a longtime volunteer at the Provena Covenant Hospice, which is celebrating its 25th anniversary of its founding this very month. Coming up for hospice at Provena is a special event November 7th. Would you tell us a little bit about that, Ruth? Well,
sure. We will be having just sort of a special gathering. We plan to have it open to people from the community. A Dr. DeForia Lane, who is a music therapist and has had her own personal struggle with cancer and is a cancer survivor, has written a book called Music as Medicine. And so it's she'll be our main speaker as we celebrate, and which sort of gets at the individual you're talking about. What is hospice, looking at some of the things that are important for people, and for many people it is music that touches us all deeply.
And so this is an event that's open to the public. Is
yes.
it a fundraiser as well as a celebration? Or
if anyone wants to make a donation that night, we would not.
Okay,
we would.
But it's a free event.
But
you're
yes,
okay.
yes, it will be.
And it's a dessert buffet. So
yes, yes.
A delicious dessert buffet.
Yes.
Okay. But you do have a fundraising event, you said, coming up in October. I think you said the 15th, the
yes.
Celebration of Taste. Tell us about that.
That's a yearly event that the hospital puts on for fundraising, and hospice is a part of that every year.
Sure.
So you'll probably see more about that as time gets closer.
Very good. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for these programs. Keeping the Faith is supported in part by the University YMCA, where I'm the executive director. The Y is the oldest continuous student organization at the University of Illinois campus. We're in our 132nd year, providing opportunities for students to be involved in community service. We do have some students who volunteer even in hospice. We have other students who volunteer doing tutoring in the public schools, other University of Illinois students who share their gifts and skills in working to preserve the environment through programs such as Prairie Restoration and Students for Environmental Concerns and many other service projects. We have students who go off on spring breaks, and instead of going to a beach party, they'll go and do a service project with kids, with adults, with Native Americans, with people who are homeless, different places around the country. We're very proud of the students who choose to voluntarily be associated with a Campus Y that has no pool or gym or fitness center, but provides many leadership opportunities. One of the events coming up with the Y this summer, we'll be receiving various events for our grand community garage sale that starts August 25th through 27th, Thursday through Saturday at the end of August. We'll be receiving items again the first week of August, including clothes. Clothes were mentioned earlier, and we do find that many international students are delighted to come and buy some inexpensive winter clothes that they may not have or other kind of clothes for this culture. Other people, too, who may like the bargains that we have at our big sale at the University Stock Pavilion that last week of August, the first week of school. So if you'd like to make a donation, please wait until August. Unless it's furniture, we can take furniture earlier. And we also can take automobiles. We have an automobile donation program, and we currently have a need for a woman with children for an inexpensive but dependable automobile in the $2,000 to $3,000 range. So if someone would like to donate that, you, of course, can get a tax write-off for what we can sell it for and as a charitable donation. If you're interested in that or would like any more information about the University Y, call me, Steve Shoemaker, 337-1500 during the week. Well, let's get back to our interview with our two guests today about hospice, and we have a couple other people waiting on the phones. Others who'd like to call, 333-9455 or 1-800-222-9455. Let's go to line one. Yes, sir.
Me again. I have suffered both personally and professionally an illness, and I wanted to know how hospice can help, because, you know, it's a blow to the ego to have be shot right down and out of the sky. And I'll hang up and listen to your guest's answers. Thank you.
So how do you help a person respond psychologically when they're suddenly struck with an illness completely out of the blue?
I think probably one of the first things Nancy talked about, listening. We get calls from physicians to see people who've, depending on where they are in their treatment, the disease has continued to progress despite treatments. We have family members who call. One of the first things we do is to go in and sort of ask people where they are, what's going on. And we really look to patients, what we call for the goals of care, what's important to them. You can have two people with the same diagnosis in a similar situation, two rooms side by side, and how they approach it is very individualized. If we just walk in and say, this is hospice, this is what we're going to do, this is what we're going to give you everybody on the team, they're all coming tomorrow, we wouldn't have an effective program, and people would wonder how we demonstrated caring. And I think some of that demonstration is finding out what's important to people, which part, you know, maybe sending the chaplain in for prayer is the most important thing we can do at that point. Maybe the person never wants to see the chaplain, and that's important to them. So it's really listening, where are they, what are their struggles? It could be something as people aren't able to talk about other things. If you're having a lot of pain, if you have a bad headache and you're nauseated and all you want to be is in the dark and left alone, to have people prodding and coming in to see how you are so that you can talk about end-of-life issues and how you feel about that doesn't work. So I think it really is, and I think that's one of the hallmarks of hospice, is really the individualized sort of focus, is what's important, how can we help, what are the issues for that person.
Now, you mentioned the chaplain that's part of the team.
Yes.
Pervena Covenant is a combination of a Catholic hospital tradition with the former Mercy and a former city hospital, Burnham.
Yes.
Are there only Catholic chaplains at Pervena?
No, we have chaplains of various different faiths. I think probably if people have a specific request, we try to honor that. Many times the chaplains will do what they can in terms of the community. If someone's already involved with the faith community, there are sometimes the chaplain will connect with maybe it's a priest, maybe it's a minister, maybe it's the rabbi or others in the community to try to provide support. So
And if a person is non-religious or even anti-religious, you don't force a chaplain on folks.
No. Mm-hmm. I think it's offering and listening to what's important for the person at this point in their life. I think sometimes we do see people struggle with spiritual issues at end of life. What does my life mean? How have things been? Sometimes people go back to their faith tradition that they were raised in.
Hmm.
We see some people who are baptized or other sorts of things as they begin to put things together for themselves at end of life.
We have another caller waiting on line two. You're on Keeping the Faith. Go right ahead, line two.
Hi, Steve. This is Nan Kratz, and I had an opportunity to be with my older sister in Florida. She's 15 years older than I, and she was in a hospice, and oh my, I have just treasured it. I just can't believe how helpful it was to both of us. And one of the things that she seemed to be waiting to talk to me about was her guilt. She felt guilty because she was dying, and she chose to do that. And she said to me at one point, do you know where I am? And I said, well, yes, you're in the hospital. And she said, yes, but do you know what part of the hospital I'm at? Mm-hmm. And I said, this is a hospice ward. And she said, do you know what that means? And I said, yes, that means that you think the next life is going to be better. And she said, yes. And she said, are you angry with me? And I said, oh, my, you know, this is a wonderful choice that that you have and that you have made. And we just connected in a very holy way. And it's an experience that I treasure. So thank you for everything that hospice does. It's been wonderful.
Thank you for telling us your experience.
Okay. Goodbye.
Thank you.
Yes. More beautiful stories.
Is that typical of people that sometimes they do feel guilty on the effect of their choice on their families?
I think various different family dynamics. Yes, sometimes for younger people, if they have young children, mm-hmm. leaving them because you want to be able to see your kids grow up and those kinds of things. Or if it's a parent who's dying.
So much of the language around sickness and death involves words like fighting. Someone is fighting cancer. Someone is courageously, fighting a debilitating disease. Is choosing hospice giving up?
Never.
We don't think so.
No, we don't.
Some people think about it in those terms. I think hospice, we talked about a philosophy of care. It's a different focus at that point. It's not giving up all care. It's not. It's a different type of caring. We may not be caring, giving you your chemotherapy or your radiation, if it's a cancer type thing, or continuing. Most of the times, when people's physical condition makes them appropriate for hospice, they've had aggressive therapies and aggressive treatments, and despite that, their disease has continued to progress.
Sure.
And I think for many of those people, it's not giving up. They didn't give up. They would have continued had the treatment been effective, but it wasn't. And I think for them, it's how do I make the end meaningful? What's important for me? And beginning to put some things in order.
I don't think we ever give up hope. I think what I have seen with families is that our hope changes. Where you were hoping the disease would be cured, it was not cured. Mm-hmm. And then you're hoping that you can be well enough to enjoy your family. Mm-hmm. You hope that you may be well enough to get out of bed and take mm-hmm. a little journey to enjoy the outdoors and the sunset or whatever. So I don't think it's a matter of giving up hope. I think it's a matter of our changing our thought processes. As Ruth says, once you have learned that your disease cannot be quote-unquote cured, then you look to what is significant, what is important, what do I want to do with my days as they remain.
Now, some religious people particularly, I think, talk sometimes about the possibility of miracles.
Yes.
Okay, the doctors say there's no hope, but I have faith in God. I have faith in mm-hmm. in a great spirit. I have faith in something beyond me, beyond this natural world. Is hospice a giving up the opportunity to believe in that?
I would think that we all would just really celebrate any miracle that takes place with mm-hmm. anyone that's within hospice care.
Mm-hmm. Ever seen any?
We've had people who yeah. the doctors thought had a couple weeks to live
right.
and took them home, and a year later they were still alive.
Uh-huh.
We've had families.
Is that a miracle? You could call it that. It's. Go ahead.
Well, I was thinking of a family that actually was discharged from hospice because they became so much better mm-hmm. that they did not meet the criteria for hospice.
So you celebrate that.
We celebrate
absolutely,
that. Absolutely,
uh-huh. absolutely.
Uh-huh. I like to believe that hospice is there for those who are looking for a quote-unquote different way to accept death than what used to be traditional ways, to go to a hospital, be in a room, kind of left alone, mm-hmm. and slowly but surely. Because mm-hmm. that doesn't happen with our hospice families.
Now, in the experience that I've had as a pastor over the years with
yes.
hospice, the people who seemed to appreciate it the most were ones who really felt that they wanted to be with their families if
yes.
they could. And hospice was able to help them do that. Is that a common thing?
I think it's common. It's also we have people who don't have families
sure.
who have a caregiver that mm-hmm. might be a neighbor or
uh-huh.
someone that helps coordinate their care. For some people, they might be in extended care facilities or nursing homes. Our staff comes intermittently, so a nurse may come, then the home health aide may come the next day, volunteers visiting. So someone else needs to be there with the person mm-hmm. 24 hours, the rest of the time.
Tell us what a social worker does as part of this team.
They do all sorts of things. Sometimes it's, I mentioned earlier, looking for supplies, air conditioners, window fans, depending on what people need. Sometimes they're involved with financial assistance, coordinating billing maybe from previous to the time that the person was in hospice, if those are issues. Family dynamics, talking about how families get along or don't. Many families, their communication styles may be stressed already, and then you put them in a very difficult situation like this, and it's difficult to communicate. So they're involved in a lot of different ways, providing support, and so that in the sense of family communication, sometimes we have a family conference. What is it that the patient wants, and then how do the different family members function together to help us so that we can help them to see that that happens?
Hmm.
Because different family members may view this very differently and think that other things should be done.
Sure.
And if you have a couple of people that have strong feelings that aren't the same, you can see then that it would create a little tension.
Steve, just we sort of lightly went by this, and I think it might be important for people to realize that hospice does provide services in some nursing home facilities
as well.
And when Ruth was talking about folks not having family and support systems, this has proven to be very valuable for folks in a nursing situation the criteria can all be worked out, and we have some of us volunteers have been fortunate to be in those positions, and it's very enriching and enlightening and helpful.
On Keeping the Faith this afternoon, we're talking about hospice with Ruth Matowick, the director of the Provena Covenant Hospice Program, and Nancy Day, a 25-year hospice volunteer. And hospice is celebrating here at Mercy at Provena Covenant. It's 25 years, second hospice in the state of Illinois. Anniversary. We're talking about members of the team, the hospice team that works together. Let's talk a little bit about doctors. Now, the doctors work so hard to keep people healthy. They work so hard to keep people alive, to give them hope. Is there resistance from doctors when hospice says, we think maybe this patient could use our services?
Most of the times, it's a collaborative effort in terms of the physician still provides the nurses with orders in terms of pain medicine. Mm-hmm. So there's frequent communication back and forth, whether that's added testing or medications, other sorts of things that need to be done. So as far as from a nursing standpoint, we're in touch with physicians so that we can help to manage the symptoms the best that we can. There are some physicians that make home visits with us and to their patients, and the patients appreciate that tremendously. Not all physicians, due to their practice, are able to do that. So for the most part, we have very good working relationship with the various different physicians in terms of referral. I think sometimes it's not necessarily thought of. Sometimes a family member will bring it up, and then the doctor will say, oh, yeah, that would be fine. Mm-hmm. They're thinking in terms of treating the disease process and those sorts of things. Most of the time when the family asks, or if the physician is finishing a course of treatment or something, so that once that's done, then we make a hospice referral. I think when you talk about when physicians went to medical school, yeah, the docs went to nursing school. But many of them, hospice wasn't part of the education. It didn't exist at that point.
Sure.
One of the callers had mentioned palliative care, and we're finding in the last probably 5 years, there are about five or six medical schools that are now focused on and have a rotation that includes palliative care and hospice. How physicians give bad news, those sorts of things. So I think we are making headway along that way because physicians are a key component to providing care for people.
We're down to under our last 10 minutes on this Keeping the Faith program with our guests talking about hospice today. If listeners would like to make a call, you still can slip in under the wire. 333-9455 is the local number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Elsewhere, you may call toll-free 1-800-222-9455. I want to ask about chaplains.
Yes.
As a team member, we referred earlier that you have Protestants and Catholics and make reference to Jewish and other people of other faiths, Muslims, mm-hmm. and so on. What are some of the spiritual issues that people face at the end of life?
We have had I talked earlier about the meaning of life.
Mm-hmm.
We had one gentleman who had been, I think it was in World War I, who had killed people, who wondered if, now does that mean that I don't get to go to heaven because I killed people?
Mm-hmm.
And the Ten Commandments say, thou shalt not kill.
Mm-hmm.
Things that you wouldn't necessarily know on the surface. So it takes some trust and some time for somebody to get to that level and to share that that's a fear and to work through what that is, other things you've seen.
No, I think you're right. As we realize or accept the fact that death is near, we may have issues that we have suppressed and now need to bring to the fore and need someone of faith to talk to about it.
We have another caller waiting on line one. You're on the air with our guests Ruth Matawick and Nancy Day.
Hi, I'm getting to be an old story, but the world has changed. We have experienced 9-1-1 and all kinds of things that happened. There's been chaos in the world. Do you think hospice is a luxury now? Because there are people who are absolutely destitute. And I remember 25 years ago, it seemed like the right vision. Do you think it's a luxury now? And I'll hang up and listen to your answer off the air. Thank you.
I don't think hospice is a luxury. I think hospice is an option that should be open to people as they become educated and hear about it and know what value it can be for them. Hospice obviously is not for everyone, but I don't think it's a luxury, but I do think there's a great deal of education that still remains for the public.
I think in terms of the fact that public aid has a hospice benefit, that Medicare has a hospice benefit, and that was has become part of the benefit for people, that if you have Medicare or Medicaid and it looks like you're at the end of your life, that's something that people can access with the help of their physician. It's a wonderful benefit in paying for the medical equipment that's needed in the home to provide care, also medications related to the reason that the person would their terminal illness, all of the team services, as we've discussed, the people that come to the home. So I think it is becoming, the more people know about it, one of the things that it is, hospice is the largest growing percentage in the Medicare budget. Mm-hmm. You've got the baby boomers that are moving on in terms of age and Medicare benefit and illness and those sorts of things. So for people who have that benefit and that's the kind of care that they want, we end up with stories like our couple of callers that it's really able to provide what people wanted it to be able to provide for them.
Tell us how a family can know or a patient can know when they should start considering hospice.
Well, sometimes if people are getting radiation and they're almost too weak to get to radiation, if you have a disease that's progressing and you make frequent trips to the emergency room and people are tired of going to the hospital all the time, sometimes it's you have to look and see, and in talking with the physician, some people feel really bad. And they may have a chronic illness, but it's not terminal. Mm-hmm. So just because somebody's tired of going to the emergency room, you just don't want to take that and say, we should call hospice. On the other hand, you could. We talk to people who think that they may be at the end of their life or that the disease has continued to progress to the point that it's very challenging for them and they need some help in terms of family support or relieving symptoms, and continuing to go back to other places. They're almost too weak, and they want the care to come to them in their homes.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about the last days.
Well, I think somebody, I don't remember who it was, talked about it's kind of like a clock. And the battery is running down and things are slower and slower and slower. The sort of physiologic function, whether that's breathing or heartbeat, blood pressure. Usually a few weeks out, people are the things that used to provide them joy, watching TV or listening to the music, they begin to shut out the outside world.
Even family.
Mm-hmm. Even family. And sometimes that can be a source of concern.
Of course.
Because, you know, I've always been here and now he doesn't want to talk to me. He doesn't mm-hmm. want to be part of that. So I think people tend to sort of gather themselves, focus inward. They eat less, drink less. And in that sort of state as the body begins to shut down, it has its own endorphins or morphines that are released. Mm-hmm. So
the patient may actually be feeling better even though they're pulling away.
And sometimes people have sort of a last burst of energy within a couple of days. Mm-hmm. And if families are close to the end and they see someone who says, this is the best they've been in a long time, mm-hmm. that might be
a bad sign. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because they sometimes there's a burst right,
a warning sign,
right before the end. So,
what's it like to be with someone as they die?
Actually, it's very peaceful. I've been there when families have said, "I didn't know it would be so peaceful mm-hmm. and calm." It can be very calm. Some families sing Amazing Grace and have music or have prayer or other sorts of things on at that time. Others, it's very silent and quiet. And some of that reflects who the person is and what they wanted and how that is.
Have you been with people for whom it was a terrifying experience?
I have not. And that came as a surprise to me over the years. It has not been a terrifying experience. I only remember one struggle, and that was a physical problem. But typically, there's just a calm.
Most of the time, that's how it is. Occasionally, there may be some of the symptoms that if we're able to get that controlled, then people are fairly unresponsive. Mm-hmm. And so that in itself is very peaceful then.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to thank our guests for being with us today, talking about hospice here on Keeping the Faith. We've been talking with Ruth Matowick, who is the director of the Provena Covenant Hospice Program at Provena Covenant Hospital in Champaign-Urbana. And we've been talking with Nancy Day, her last name is spelled D-A-I-G-H, who is a 25-year hospice volunteer. Thank you for talking with us about these important end-of-life issues, and thanks also to our callers and to Jan Shepherdson, particularly, who was one of the founders of the hospice here and who has called and shared some of her insights and issues with us. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for this program, and next week our guest will be Elihu Smith, talking about Zen Buddhist practice in a diverse culture. That's July 17 on Keeping the Faith. The week following, we'll have an archive program that was first broadcast March 20th this year on religion and evolution with Professor Bruce Folk from the University of Illinois. God and the Ivory-Billed Woodpecker will be the title for our July 31st program with Pastor Roger Diggs from Grace Lutheran Church. These are some of the programs coming up on future Keeping the Faith. Do write down our phone numbers so you can give us a call on those programs. Thank you for listening. I'm Steve Shoemaker.
You've been listening to Keepin' the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
Mimi Sheraton loves bialys, those Jewish crusty rolls with the toasted onion center, so she set out to visit the Polish town of Bialystok to find the people who invented them. But the thriving town of 50,000 didn't survive the Nazis. I'm Jim Fleming. Join us for Stories About Bread next time on the Peabody Award-winning program To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Tonight at 7 here on WILL Urbana.
WILL programming is funded in part by a grant from TK Service Center, 806 Perkins Road in Urbana, offering automotive repair on cars and trucks by ASE-certified technicians. In business since 1984, they perform computerized engine diagnostics, alignments, brake and suspension work, and other repairs. A shuttle service for customers is also available. The phone number for TK Service is 344-0800 or on the web at tkservicecenter.com.
Tonight in Champaign-Urbana, partly cloudy with a low in the lower 60s and southeast winds around 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow, partly sunny with a chance of rain in the afternoon, the high around 90 degrees with east winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy with a chance of rain, the low in the upper 60s with east winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. It's 6 p.m. This American Life is next.